I'm Pave, Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into Unpaved. He is Sean Salisbury. As you see, we have a brand new open that shows everything that we do here, including Sean, I guess, throwing touchdown passes back in the day.
Career in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Great stuff by Bailey and Triple E in the group. Thank you, guys, man. That's fun. And welcome. We welcome in Bailey, who will be another part of our another piece. I told you guys we're fitting pieces in, and he's another great part to it. So, great production. Honored to be here as always on a Monday. I know Veterans Day tomorrow. We've been honoring them over the weekend, and we will again tomorrow. But thanks. Great start to the stuff. I don't ever want to see the new open, and I don't want to see it. Yep. And I saw it there. But I'm glad they got skill set, because there's more skill set to put it together, because trying to find all that than there is the guy who actually made a few throws and the rest of it. But great to be on with you, and we're blessed to have such a talented team around us, man.
For sure. That would have taken me 6 years to make. So it's nice to have people that are. Dude,
I'd be 90 by the time I got done with it with modern technology. Yeah. There you go.
So welcome into Unpaved. We got some breaking news to get to in just a second before we get to JB. Make sure you go like and subscribe to our YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury there on YouTube. Follow us on Twitter at Adam G. Sager, at Sean Unfiltered. Follow the show at Unpaved on Rumble. Sean, breaking news right before the show starts here. Brian Daboll out as the Giants coach, as they lost to the Chicago Bears yesterday, and kind of a meltdown situation for the Giants. Up 10 late in the game, they lose. So Daboll out, Jackson Dart got hurt. But for you and JP, yes, he was concussed during the game. What does this do for a young quarterback to see your head coach fired halfway through your rookie year? So that's something for you two. And there's a lot of layers here when it comes to New York football, because New York football right now is very, very bad. And fans in New York, we know, are passionate, and they don't want to wait for their teams to be good. But yet right now, they're arguably the two worst teams in football right now.
There's no doubt. And both of them, and you know, the Jets are struggling with their trying to win themselves a bunch of games as well. So both head coaches want a first year guy. Think about this real quick, Segs, before we get to JB, is 2 years ago when they made it to the playoffs, he was one of the hottest coaches. And, you know, they went in, had a win, then got beat in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Daniel Jones just had a new, you know, was going to get a new contract. All that stuff was exploding on this. I think right after that is when Jones got the new deal, right, Segs?
Yep.
Because of that and Daboll's belief. And Mike Kafka, the coordinator, was a hot commodity to be another head coach around the league. Just like that, it goes sideways. And to answer your question, and I know you and I will come back and talk about it, and I'll bring in JB with this, is Jackson Dart had to know, you know, he gets drafted. You don't know. It's not like you can pick a college like you do when you come out of high school. He got drafted by the Giants. I'm sure in his mind, he said, well, we can save the job. But as a young quarterback, you got to know the chances of you being with the same coach your entire career, that's reserved for the Mahomeses in Kansas City. So you go in almost scarred to this. And he, listen, Jackson Dart was at SC. He saw that happen with him. You know, he left school, obviously, had a coach there when they changed coaches and ended up at Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin. So this is something you prepare for. The question is, now where do the Giants go this offseason? They'll have an interim coach, and then they'll obviously find a new one. But both teams in New York reeling. Brian Daboll, how quickly it can change. But maybe if Jackson Dart's there, it's a different story. A good man. It just didn't work out, and we're impatient with quarterbacks and head coaches. Let's bring in JB. Segs and I will continue to talk about this as we roll forward. And it's at the real coach underscore JB on Twitter. Cigar in hand, as always. I know he's fired up. JB, great to talk to you, brother. Hell of a weekend in football. Some choke jobs, some coaches fired, some teams showing their mettle in college and the NFL, and some kind of disappearing from the scene. Let's start with Daboll, JB. You and I both think he's a good football coach, and we know that. And having Josh Allen in Buffalo, that'll help. But he did a hell of a job there early. Unfortunately, went south, and not enough good players or more coaching problem, more player problem, JB. Was the timing right for this? Because you and I have discussed basically all fall that this was probably inevitable that it was going to happen. Agree with the move?
I don't agree with the move. I think they failed him at every level there. It started with Saquon Barkley, obviously, after a playoff run, beating Minnesota in Minnesota. Danny Dimes, he loses his running back. And now look at what's happened since. It spiraled out of control. They had a great draft this year. I think the best draft. They get some pieces in place. Jackson Dart energizes the team. Scadaboo gets hurt. Jackson gets hurt. I mean, I would believe they win yesterday if he don't go down. Russell Wilson comes in, looks like a shell of himself. He probably needs to hang it up. He looked horrific. And I don't know how you blame the guy that you traded, Saquon Barkley, when clearly Daboll wanted to keep him. Like, I don't know how you fire him after that. But, again, we're in a results-oriented business, Sean. You got to win. And what have you done for me lately? And that's what they're going to look at and say, well, what you've done for me lately is you're 2-7 or whatever. So at the end of the day, it always falls on the head guy. And unfortunately, ownership will not take any blame for this. It's always the head coach. And you're only as good as your players. At the end of the day in the NFL, Sean, we all get paid, right? First and 15th to do a job. And if your Jimmys ain't as good as their Joes, guess what?
JB, with that, how bare was the cupboard in your mind for Brian Daboll, in truth? How bare? Russ Wilson for Daniel Jones, Jackson Dart for Russ Wilson, no Saquon Barkley. Did they give him any cans of food in the cupboard, or was it fairly empty? Because you mentioned the draft, they got a pretty good front. Was there enough to win with? Does Daboll take on any of this in your mind?
I don't think they had enough to win with. I think they got they made some moves in the draft. They got Carter, which we liked. I thought their D-line was going to be better than it is. Thibodeau, him, Brian Burns, they got some guys. But at the end of the day, I still think they're wide out. I mean, look who they've lost this year. Like, right. How are you supposed to win? Seriously, like, you're going to – so your best wide out that was showing glimpses of being a top-tier NFL guy and neighbor. You could say he's a shitbird or whatever, but at the end of the day, he was unbelievable. Scadaboo, who was an energetic – I mean, it looks like, you know, damn near Larry Zonka out there. And then you get this young, energized quarterback who is kind of – the team is behind – and he gets hurt yesterday. Like, I don't know what you expect the head guy to do. Go play for you? I don't know. But at the end of the day, I don't think anybody was going to get through that deal, did you? I don't think anybody gets it.
You and I hinted towards that the lack of players and playmakers was going to end up being his demise. JB, it makes me smile. You mentioned Larry Zonka, and I'm sitting here thinking, are there people literally out there that have zero idea?
Yeah, I have no idea.
And I'm thinking, oh, Zonk was the guy, you know, with that fullback face bar, protect his nose, the little horseshoe there, and to do it. But Scadaboo plays like, you lose him, you lose your wide receiver. Jackson Dart's got some excitement. But the cupboard, put it this way, may not have been bare, say, JV, but it was fairly empty. Brian Daboll will coach again. It just won't be here. Where they go next will be interesting. You mentioned Larry Zonka, his Miami Dolphins team. JB, what's more, are we concerned about Buffalo more than we are that how does Miami do this yesterday, but they just can't seem to put it all together? Because they looked a little more physical yesterday. They looked like a team, but that's a small sample size of them looking like a team this year. What baffles you more, Miami or Buffalo yesterday?
I guess if you take out the funness out of the locker room, I guess you can win. Hence Lamar Jackson and Mike McDaniel, because they had a little basketball shooting game in there. I guess they took that out, and they've won two games. The Ravens took out all the, you know, skee ball and everything out of their locker room, and now they're winning. I only think they're that's magnified because Pittsburgh Steelers are losing, and that's why they're catching up with them in the division. So I think they're magnifying that. But at the same time, Miami, you know, goes up there and does what they did, a 13-0 start, two touchdowns by Tua right out the gate in the first 5 minutes. I took Miami plus +8 because I thought that was a great spot. Buffalo's run defense is the worst in football, literally, statistically, and just watching it with the eyeball. They are ungap sound as hell. I don't know what's going on with McDermott in that defense. He's a defensive guy. They just beat Kansas City, so you're thinking, okay, they're back after losing a couple games, and they beat KC when KC was on a heater. So now you're like, all right, here's the Buffalo team we thought. They're like Pittsburgh to me. They don't have any weapons, Sean. And if Josh Allen's not Superman and just regular, just superb, they don't win. Like, he has to be Superman, because their team, if you focus on stopping the run in Buffalo and Cook, who are they going to? Keon Coleman is a average number two. Let's just be honest. Shakir is a number two slot receiver. They have a couple decent tight ends, but they don't have a Brock Bowers, a young athletic guy there. They don't have a Tyler.
Their best weapons are the combination of tight ends, right? For the most part.
Them and Pittsburgh are the same. I mean, they're trying to play 13 personnel, and they're trying to be 12 and big tight end sets because they have no weapons. They have no wideout. And Josh Allen's sitting there stuck with his dick in his hand waiting to get rid of the football, and their guys can't win. They can't win on the edge. So if your guys ain't winning at one-on-one battles, who are they throwing to? Nobody. And so you got to go to Dalton Knox and Kincaid and these tight ends who are – you can't win. It's not a recipe for success in the long run, Sean, in my opinion. And I think they've – for them not to make a trade at deadline, to me – It's malfunctional dysfunction. It's
malpractice, right? Football malpractice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's dysfunction at the ultimate level. I don't know how you don't go get a pass rusher. I don't know how you don't get a wide out. I don't know how you don't do these things. And I think Buffalo and McDermott's next on the firing block.
I'm trying to picture Alan with a hog in your hand and throwing. JB, have you ever tried that at home? Of course you have. You take that hog in the back.
What's a hog?
The Harley in my garage. Okay, there you go. That hog, right? But you know, you can't play with it in your hand and then have the football in the other. You know what I'm saying, JB? And Pittsburgh, very similar. You're exactly right. I was going to hit on them, and you did. Let me get to these Jaguars. I don't think Trevor Lawrence is ever going to be a star in the league. I did when he came out. Got paid. Shows flashes of brilliance every game. Shows me every game also that why he's not a star, and then a bunch of in between. He just does. And it's just that there's not a consistency of dominant, accurate playmaking skills that the first pick of the draft has got to elevate and execute to be that guy. He's a good player, but if his career ended today, you would call it a bust because, well, as the first pick of the draft, we expect you to have a yellow jacket on, a gold jacket on at the end of time and being a Hall of Famer, being a bunch of Pro Bowls. But does he elevate his team regularly? No, sometimes. It's just at a different level as a first pick of the draft. JB, I think he's overpaid. I think he's overhyped. And when he came out, I thought he was going to be a great player. And I saw flashes of it. The problem is the flashes are still there, but there's also flashes of a guy who wouldn't be a starter if he wasn't the first pick of the draft at times. And the physical, you know, he's imposing physically. Something's missing, and something's missing from that team, too. Once again, they go on a roll, and they fool us. A lot of tomfoolery with them. And here they are, choke a 19-point lead and lose to the Texans in Houston when all they had to do is get a few first downs in the second half, and they close it out.
Well, 26 dominated him.
Yes, in the fourth quarter. Second half.
Are we talking about Trevor today, though, if their defense doesn't give up 26 points in the fourth quarter to Davis Mills?
No, but I'm going to tell you what. Mills played his ass off in the second half. He delivered the ball. It goes back to last week when Segs and I were doing a show, and D'Amico during the week said, well, I'm not going to give him too much to do. I said, screw that. He's a backup, but he started in this league. You've got to load him up and expect him to make plays for you. Yeah. And Davis Mills did. A tough start. Hell, couldn't catch a snap from center. Threw it to the other team, but the fact that he hung in there and overcame, oh, no, their defense was putrid. And I'm not putting it all on Trevor Lawrence, but that's usually where we go because a few more first downs and a few more possessions, And in defense of him, they leave a lot of balls on the ground that hit people in the hands too. There's a lot wrong with Jacksonville. Don't let the record fool you. This team's no Super Bowl threat, correct?
No. Heck no. And they could easily be like 7-2. That's the crazy part. Like, that's the
They had that game dead to rights yesterday. I was turning it off to go watch reruns of Murder, She Wrote with Angela Lansbury, but I kept it on because I'm local here in Houston. A tremendous effort to come back and win. But the fact of the matter is, Jacksonville does what Jacksonville's done for a while. Tease you, thrill you, and then break your heart. We've seen it in the playoffs. We've seen it regularly. And Trevor Lawrence doesn't elevate them to a level of wow, although it's not fair just to put it on him because they also lack some weapons in key positions as well, JB.
Yeah, no doubt. They're hurting too.
All right, now let me switch to Dan Campbell, Detroit. Every time I say Johnny Mort, the coordinator, I'm thinking of our guy, Johnny Mort, the wide receiver, who also played Detroit. Every time I said, no. Well, he replaced and calls the plays. Needed? Wise move. Now, the results said yes. What do you think about it? Was it the right move? And would you do that if you you reserve the right as a coach? JB, you've been a head coach. Have you ever had to do what Dan Campbell did? And what was the comfortability?
I had to do it on the other side, Sean. I've had to do it on the other side. So I was calling the O and the D and the head coach. I've had to do both. I've had to get rid of guys. Here's the issue he faces. I had Coach Severini, who's the head coach at Northeastern State right now, on the show. And he's like, listen, the problem is, Sean, like, have they bought in? Has the guy you demoted, is he still all in? Or does he want out? And is he looking to get out? And is he going to make Dan fire him? Because at the end of the day, I've had to do that. Like, listen, man, I'm the guy that gets fired in this chair. So I have to do what's best for the program. You really don't have a big – you're not in the seat. So as a play caller, you're cool. But at the same time, you don't get fired. I do. You get hired as the assistants. The head guy gets fired. So at the end of the day, he had to do what he had to do for his program and his organization. And it is what it is. They had a great output. I think their best offensive output as he took over. It looks like the team rallied behind him taking over. And that's right there, the telltale sign. They're all in on that guy. They believe in this guy, not the OC, not the DC. They're as good as this guy and what they believe in and run through a wall for that guy. And that's at the end of the day. Now, his plate is going to be fuller. Now he's got to watch more defense, less special teams as the CEO, manager of the team. He's got to now focus on defensive scouting reports for every team and opponent and then forward opponent. So he's got to prep now double, triple time as the head coach, CEO. So his plate's full, but guess what? That's what our jobs are, man. We're the CEO. Leaders create more leaders, not more followers. He's got to create now a bunch more leaders, and now we've got to see. Now he's got to watch. He's got to have a 24/7 axis on his head spinning around now looking at, is this guy all in here as I demoted him just to be the quarterback coach now? Is he still going to help me out, or is he going to be sucking his teeth? As you know how that goes, Sean. And now I got to fire the guy. So, listen, he clearly wasn't happy, or it wasn't to his expectation. He probably hired from within. Well, that's what he did after, Ben left. Johnson. And Ben's doing what he does. And you know, you never seen him with the play call sheet with Ben Johnson calling it, right? So, now he's got a play call sheet the last couple weeks. People started to speculate, did he take over? I think he started to gradually do so, and now he came out finally and said, I had to take over, and it's what I thought was best for the team, and that just is what it is.
JB, did you lose your assistants that way? Did they stay all in? Or was the support there? Did you get a little chatter behind the scenes of how dare him? It's impossible not to feel a demotion because it's a demotion.
Oh, yeah. Now the players. And it's a fairness. The players are looking at the OC now different.
Right.
It's just natural. It's just human nature. Like, all right, now I'm the quarterback coach, and now I was play caller. Now do they look at me like I don't, I got shit on my neck. Like, I don't, everything I say doesn't mean anything anymore. So, like, there's a definite, like, morale.
There's a danger there of losing some teammates, right? Or losing respect from the coaching staff.
Oh, yeah. He won't be there after this year. I guarantee you that. That's just how it goes.
JB, they have a quarterback coach, and then they have the coordinator. Because in the NFL, we do it different than college. Quarterback coach is usually the coordinator. Yeah. So that also says, once you've demoted the coordinator, is your quarterback coach kind of the second in charge of the offense, even though at least mentally how the players are looking at this, the guy who is sitting in the meeting room with Goff the whole time. It is a slippery slope, the one that Dan obviously, yes, that there's not chatter behind the scenes and that gossip.
And you hope he's all in helping Dan, like, get the scouting report, the car, getting all the down and distance stuff ready, getting all the percentages ready, the down and distance. This is what they give me on second down, first down, second and long, third and short. This is what we're going to see, coach. Expect this. Hopefully he's all in and he's not just kind of, because body language is going to tell Dan real quick if he's all in or all out. And I'm sure he had that conversation with him. I'm sure Dan had that conversation. And hopefully Dan's kept him. So far, it looks like hopefully he's all in or Dan would have probably got rid of him.
Right. All right, let me give you this last topic before I let you go. And I know you had a great show this morning with passion. Colorado, you're close to it, with Matt McChesney on there. And you talk about Colorado a lot. Deion came in and no doubt made an impact. JB, when it came to, revitalizing a program, bringing attention to a program, won some when he had Hunter and Shador. But I would ask you this: in year three, they're eliminated from, a bowl game. Are they prepared enough in your mind, and how is this going to end in Colorado?
I don't know. I never thought he would get past year three. I was looking forward for him in year three to see the progression, because year three is when the head coach, in my opinion, defines who they are, whether it's the culture, whether it's the development, whether it's the recruiting, whether it's the buy-in from all parts and facets of the program, meaning AD, administration, players wanting to go there, etc. It just hasn't happened. They've actually digressed clearly from what they do recruiting-wise and the philosophy there. His health compiled in, missing spring ball. I mean, that matters, man. People don't want to talk about it. It matters. And there's no knock on Deion for it, one of the best players ever to play football. At the end of the day, though, he's hired a bunch of people that's never recruited in their life, never coached in their life, but they're Hall of Famers as players. Doesn't mean they're Hall of Famers as coaches. And this is a different ballgame. Half the players don't even know who you are, Warren Sapp, Marshall Faulk. No offense. That's just what Sean and I just alluded to with Larry Zonka take. They're not even – half of them probably don't know who those guys are. And now you're going to go out and recruit and understand. We get it. We know who you are. But if you haven't been into a household and understand the grind, turning over rocks, finding players that, not just are on 247 sports five-star lists. No, there's players out there that in 300 million people in America that you can go find that aren't on a list that are difference makers. That's recruiting. Going to find new blood for your program. That's the definition. I don't think they have a guy on their staff that does that. And Andre Hart is a friend of mine who's the coach of linebackers there. He's a recruiter, but he's not enough. And you can see it. And he's only coached his son at quarterback. You can clearly tell that was a huge, huge deficiency, because you get a big-time quarterback as a freshman, and now it's week 9, and that's when you decide to start him. That is an inexperienced head coach in at that position at the end of the day. That means you've been comfortable coaching your own son for so long that now when it's not him, you don't know what to do. You don't know where to turn. And you don't have a Travis Hunter no more. You those guys don't fall off trees, and you clearly didn't replenish the cabinets and the cupboards. And now it might be the end of it, in my opinion, because you're just you're under 500 as a head coach. You haven't won a big time game. You haven't won any bowl games either. Going back to Jackson State, you're the face that is iconic, and you bring in a lot of money. But at some point, just like Brian Daboll learned today, wins and losses is going to trump anything else, because at the end of the day, social media and all this other stuff goes out there. It goes viral. You can pay a guy a lot of money, Sean, but at the end of the day, if you don't win, eventually it runs stale. And he's got a bunch of what I call prime sexuals now even going at him. His own defenders now turning on him. That's what we are. That's what social media is. They'll love you one day and hate you the next. So unfortunately, his health and everything else compiled in there. I just don't see how you can do it comfortably or, energetically day in, day out when you're worried about health.
JB, I got to end with this. You played the position, quarterback. You've coached it. You've coached championship teams. What's tougher? I know people say, of course, it's tougher to play. But in truth, you think about Warren. I love Sapp. Marshall Faulk's one of the smartest football guys I've ever been around. He just is. Love him. But sometimes, the friendships and all that get in, and you think coaching is going to be easier. What's tougher, to be a great player or to be a great coach?
Coach, not even close.
Why? Especially at the college level? Why?
Yeah, and listen, we love Kurt Warner and Cam Newton, all these people. They're all coming at me with this whole quarters, Mina Kimes thing that's gone viral. Here's the issue. Kurt Warner, respectfully, and I've told him this. I've also talked to Cam, who I recruited out of college. I've known Cam a long time. He's been on our show. They have no clue what coaching entails. That's, unfortunately. See, the common casual fan out there will say, oh, you're crazy, JB. Kurt Warner, Super Bowl champ, gold jacket guy. He is, respectfully, and he's unbelievable. I love his story. And I'm a Rams guy, so obviously I love
Kurt Warner. And a great dude, obviously.
Great human being. Yes. But he has no clue what coaches entails. And you can hear by just the lingo that he uses. Like, quarters coverage and cover four are completely different galaxies. He keeps using the same terms. Those are truly completely different things, Sean. And when you're a coach versus a player, because you see four shell, you think, you know how many coverages under four shell there are? 1,000.
Well, most will just say, most will call it four across the board.
Say, cover four. Well, that's what you can tell that you've never coached anybody other than your kids out in the backyard. And that is why I don't think people respect what we've actually had to do for the last 20 plus years going from player to coach. And listen, a lot of great players have shown you that coaching's not that easy, is it? You could be the greatest player in Deion Sanders you want. He's 16 and 19 as a head coach. It's not that easy, is it? Mike Singletary got fired pretty quick in Frisco, didn't he? It's not as easy as you think when you're a great player. Warren Sapp, Marshall Faulk's learning real quick that it's not as easy as you thought. You could be the greatest player, but what happens is when you're a great player, Sean, and you go coach, why you can't backpedal, turn, and run and go pick that ball off? Like they act like it's supposed to be like
why Warren's trying to coach guys, why can't you do how good I was? Or Marshall Faulk being a versatile three-down back. And I was saying that during pre-shows, the hardest thing to do as a guy who's been in it and coach, you know, all that stuff and played it, is your expectations of the guy you're coaching. You expect him to be as good as you if you're Marshall and Warren. And in truth, there's going to be very few that are as good as those two.
And the number one thing is, Sean, is the patient side. Right. You don't have patience because you pick it up and put it down because you're so much better. These guys, you're coaching, and now you become a teacher of the game, and that's what they don't understand. See, Kurt Warner could take the play from Mike Martz, get out there, unbelievable play design, just like Patrick Mahomes can take Andy Reid stuff. I'm not saying Kurt Warner doesn't know shit. Of course he knows stuff. What I'm saying is, though, your job as a player at that time when you're getting paid to play football – you're learning the scouting report, what the defense does versus you and your packages, and execute the called play. That doesn't mean you know every single detail that goes into the coverage or the defense that play is designed to beat,
though. Or the protections
as well. Nuances. Yeah. And you've never coached, so guess what? You only know what you were taught by certain people, whether it was college or pro. In Arena League for Kurt Warner, right? He knew how to get rid of the ball quick. Mike Martz saw that, and Dick Vermeil, oh, we can get this guy with a quick release and fits our system, comes in. We got the greatest wideouts on turf at the time with Marshall Faulk sprinkled in there with Orlando Pace and NFL Hall of Fame guys all over the place. And guess what? Kurt Warner was a nutty, gutty winner and had the heart and God-fearing and went out there and executed it. But that doesn't mean you know all the things that go into coaching and all the nuances that it takes for us to design that play for you to be successful. And that's just telling Kurt, Cam, Dan Orlovsky, and everybody else that wants to troll, listen, you think you know it, but you don't. But guess what, Sean? You and I can talk about it until we're blue in the face. They're always going to take their side publicly because they wear a gold jacket, and rightfully so. They were great and love them to death. But at the end of the day, this coaching thing, you do it if it was that easy.
Yeah, it's brutal. It takes, especially at college, because all the recruiting now with NIL and transfer portal, you got to learn how to babysit as well. JB, great stuff, brother. Be a great week this week. There's a lot to talk about. I'm sure we'll hit more on Dayball on your show, and we'll look forward to it again, brother. Enjoy that cigar, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right, brother. Love you.
Appreciate it. You too. Love you too, man. That's at @TheRealCoach_JB, one of my favorites. Let's bring Segs back in, this Deion thing, Segs, before we start to get to what I would have considered one of the great drives and performances on a late drive on the road that we've seen at Penn State with Indiana, but beforehand. you know, it is, I've said it all along, and, you know, I've been a guy who's been offered coaching jobs with the Arizona Cardinals and the LSU situation, but there is so much that goes into it. As JB just mentioned, I don't need to regurgitate it. And all those guys, hell, I've talked football with Kurt Warner for a while. We heard it, that he goes like I do to the, we're the only two non-coaches. We coach like private training and all that, but the only two non-coaches that go to that think tank with like 20 coordinators. Yeah. And you learn a lot. And having played it for all those years, there's still little intricacies. And that's not even counting the recruiting and all the stuff behind the scenes you got to know. It's a very difficult thing. And Dion is what's changed the culture of the program. But it still comes down to winning. I'm anxious to see what he or they do this offseason, Sakes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just you look at it. He changed the perception of Colorado football.
Doubt.
Back to what used, you know, when it was Curtis Enos and all those guys, you know, playing great football in the 90s. But all he did was change the image because of who he is.
Well, Enos was at Penn State. You're talking about a high school trophy winner.
Yeah, Rashaan Salaam.
Yeah, Salaam. That's exactly.
Well, Chicago Bears. That's why I got.
Well, I mentioned Penn State as well because he went to Penn State. So there you go.
Yeah, I had Bears running back in my mind and Curtis Enos, Rashaan Salaam, both. But so, yeah, I mean, he changed the image, turned him around, and yeah, brought a high level premier player in his son with him from Jackson State. Oh, brought another 5-star number one recruit in the country. I got a bug right in front of my face. Travis Hunter, right, to Colorado. They weren't good the first year. Second year, yes, things got better. Those two got more comfortable. We saw Travis Hunter go out and play an incredible season on both sides of the ball. And yet, soon as those guys leave, boom, they fall right down. And nobody can say, oh, well, the recruiting this, recruiting that. They got, like, the number one tackle and the Seton kid. They've got a big-time quarterback in Julian Lewis, who I think, if I remember correctly, stole him from USC, right? I want to say he was committed to USC, and then now he goes to Colorado. So,
hell of a talent.
They have pieces, yeah. And portal kids, I mean, went in flocks to Colorado to play for Dion, to play for all these guys, and have all the lights that they were getting when Travis and Shadur were there. And, yeah, it hasn't been good enough, and we've been talking on this show for weeks now. I thought Deion Sanders and Luke Fickell should have been fired, and Luke Fickell's keeping his job. And so far, Deion Sanders just continues to lose in historic fashion, and yet he's still the head coach of Colorado. So
anxious to see what he does health moving forward, and if he wants to coach more, depending on what happens to Colorado,
right?
How much longer he wants to coach there, and or if something happens and he leaves or they move on from him, will he throw his name into the hopper for other jobs that are open?
Right.
Or will he take time off? And really, he's been pretty, you know, quiet. When I say quiet, it's not like he looked at all the inner details. I know he's going through a bunch of surgeries on his foot. I mean, some help where he is in that process that he knows, you know, and so we can obviously pray and root for him. But there's going to be some decisions that have to be made in Colorado and SIGS, which leads us to college football talk to start off. I've seen a lot of players this year and a lot of players over the course of time and make great drives. And I think that Cignetti has done a great job at Indiana. And while Penn State is not the same team that they've been, going to Happy Valley, winning on the road when you're down and happen to go in about $1.25 after taking the first sack of the drive, you're from behind, happen to go 80 yards, the length of the field, and then the second down play is like second 17. Having to go the length of the field is a brutal thing to have to do there. And then for the way it turned out, a Heisman Trophy moment, signature moment. And if you are an NFL scout, all you needed to see was about five plays at the end to know who Fernando Mendoza is. It was a phenomenal win, my man.
Yeah, I mean, what a drive. I was actually going to my little nephew's, their varsity playoff game. So I'm standing at the fence at the game while they're warming up. And I've got my phone on watching the final drive. I'm like literally standing there. I had people coming up behind me to watch the end of the game because it was just when I left, it was okay. Penn State's going to win this, India. And then Indiana gets the ball back. And then boom, the first play, the sack. You're like, oh, crap. And then he just takes off. And it was incredible.
Well, let me show you something. Start that video over again, Triple A. Hold it right there for a second. Freeze it. Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to show without drawing all 22 up, Sakes.
Right.
Just to kind of give you a little visual, when we get our telestrator done, and set up a big studio. It'll be much easier. But I'm just going to draw like a half line and what you're looking for on this final drive. Remember, he takes a sack, so it's second 17.
Yeah.
So if we're drawing this, you tell me if you can see it, okay. Say if this is the center, and I'm just going to draw the two wide receivers, the Y and the Z if you want, however. Mm-hmm. And against this, that first second 17 play is a – that's a light. So I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, you're good.
You guys can see.
We can see it.
Is that's it. You can see the whole – can you see these things, the whole thing?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. So I'm just going to drop in the QB back here in the gun without drawing at all. When we call a seam play, it's a vertical play. If the middle of the field is closed, then that means hash marks, we don't want to run into the middle of the field. So this guy's got to see that. So does this guy, right? So you call all verts and you're trying to put this guy in a bind with double seams. Well, boom. Great job of widening and staying outside the hash marks for what we call, it's just a one ball rip shot. Catch the ball, put your foot in the ground. He took a quick reset and throw it. Second 17, you do not want to bend it into this guy. That's middle of the field open stuff, which we'll see later in this drive. Middle of the field closed. Keep it wide so your quarterback has a shot, and you have got to get the ball out in time. It's right over the outstretched arms underneath that right there. Watch this first play. This is second 17, I believe. No timeouts, about a buck 20 to go. Bam. Keeps him outside the hash mark so the middle safety doesn't have a chance. Now, all 22 may look different. So, bam, there's the catch and tackle. So they come back up the next play. Segs, let me wipe this off real quick for us just over here so we can get this done. Bam, bam, bam. Let me spray it. See, we'll keep talking. Come on now. There you go. I want to make sure I get it done right for you guys. Okay, so here's this now. We got working sidelines. Now they're into the hash mark, Sakes. So they're on the short side of the field.
Yep.
Just going to run up, boom, a little out, a little small comeback. 1, 2, 3. Going to bust it over the sidelines. Now watch Mendoza here. Protecting the ball, off coverage. Even if it's press, you're pushing and pushing them up. Good coverage, but watch the location of this throw on the outcut. 1, 2, 3, quick hitch, ball out, bam. Bring him down the stem, little 10, 12-yard gain. So then what was it, second, 10, first down. Now they're going to come back, Segs, freeze it right there. Going to come back now on this one. And then we're coming to the other seam route, Segs. So we call the same play. We got him on it on second 17, right? Now, middle of the field open. That right there, hash marks. Middle of the field open is mofo, middle of the field open. We don't want to run to be covered, send two guys up the seam. So we'll designate a guy the bender. And if it's this guy right here, which it was, so same play call, but this time the Y sees the – now it's wet as hell. Sorry about that. I know everybody loves that term, but I don't know why my marker's not working. Let me change markers on this. Wet as hell. Where they go, and now we're going to run what we call a bender off this. So the middle of the field, the safety split. We want to take the middle of the field instead of run to be covered. Same play call. All we're doing is telling this why. You're the bender, man. You got to make the adjustment. I'm going to throw you inside. Same trajectory, everything. Watch the play now. First and 10. Gets the same call he did, but now they got to adjust. Bam. Bender inside the hash marks. So he brings him in away from trouble. He's protecting him from the most dangerous guy. Bam, keeping it away from that safety. You never want to cross to the center where the ball's lined up, and he throws the bender. Okay, now we'll go to the next one, which along this way, guys, while we're talking about this, think about the great catches that were made as well. I'm not just taking it away. These last two catches are a bit mind-boggling under the circumstances and pressure of the game. Now we're over here, Segs, quarterback in the gun. We have, boom, back shoulder fade. He's running a fade. But if the guy's with him or in front of him where you can't get it over the top, he has to throw about a 1.3 ball to give him a chance. He goes in high points. Watch this catch. Now watch where the location of the football is. If he throws it inside, you're in trouble. If he throws it too high, which he almost did, watch not only the body control, but watch this. Now it's a far throw too now. Middle of the field, you got to throw it to the bottom of the field. Sets his feet. Freeze it. That is a phenomenal back a little bit. Look where he throws it. Bring that back a little bit and freeze it at the top of the catch if you can. Guys, see this? Sets his feet. Quick hitch. Freeze. Now, say, look at the coverage. Look at the receiver's eyes on the ball. Steve Large said to me when I was a rookie, when he attacked the point of the football. If you miss the point, you get the middle of the ball. his eyes are right on it. If his eyes were on the defensive back, that ball goes, because that ball was a rip shot. Right. Now to be able to have the wherewithal, this is like Chris Carter, Larry Fitzgerald shit. Coming down, foot in bounds. But that throw, if he throws it too far, that's just, you're throwing the ball out of bounds. You're throwing it upfield. Coverage was phenomenal. So let me say he's even or in front of me. Let me throw it to the back shoulder. Then there's that. Now hold that, freeze that before we go. So there's that. Another great catch, another great throw. Do you see how quick Mendoza's feet are, Segs? Even when he takes that quick reset hitch, it's not a big hitch. It's a boom, reset, ball's out. One, boom, boom, out. Now the final one. I want you, that you cannot throw it any better. And this is play after play. Then we get down to the red zone. Now, Dan Fouts told me, and I've said this years before you run this play, freeze it right there. Dan Fouts told me, and now there's the guy that's going to make the play, Segs, once again. Yep. Fouts told me years ago, you want to gain respect, deliver the football when you get hit in the mouth and stand in there for your offensive line. Quarterback, red zone, this is the Y again. Boom. Works the end line. He's going to catch this ball underneath the goalpost, right? Underneath the crossbar. I want you to watch. The middle of the field is open again. If there had been somebody sitting in the middle of the field, we couldn't have made this. So he would have to stay skinny. So this is a variation of the three times they've called this route to get him. And remember, the play before was a penalty. It came from the other side. I remember when they called a penalty on it. So Mendoza's going to reset. Now watch this. He didn't even get to set his feet. There's pressure. They were blitzing, getting after him. He's backpedaling, has to make a jump pass. Watch this throw to the middle of the field open. It's either his guy or nobody ball. And then the feet inbounds, it ain't going to get better. He's going to take a shot to the mouth, which is instant respect. And then he's going to close it out. Watch his shot, the blitz coming from his backside. And the fact that he got his foot down is nothing short of phenomenal, and completed the catch and finish off, hits him in the mouth on his retreat. He can't even set his feet to drive the ball. Boom, it's like a jump pass, puts a little air on it. Again, middle of the field. He can't take the middle of the field if there's a body. Freeze it. See, the body's trailing him, Segs. So they had a lot of room, even if it was man or whatever. But the middle of the field was open, so he's going to take the middle instead of stay up the seam. And bam, then to close it out, phenomenal, phenomenal stuff. And great job by Mendoza. It was the drive of the year, in my opinion, considering the circumstances and where you're ranked. And if you're Cignetti, you're sitting over there and you're just like, my coordinator, turn it loose, man. Let's go do this. Mendoza, how quickly the ball came out, how courageous he was to stand in there and deliver it. And three different times, two middle of the field open, one middle of the field closed, two sideline throws to each side, which one was a spectacular catch. To Reed, get it out on time, no timeouts, length of the field, ball game over. This team's dangerous. And Mendoza, if you're an NFL scout watching, you're saying this kid was different. And he delivered the ball. And you got to have some help from your friends to do something. It's like a long run from a running back, Segs. You got to have some blocking downfield by a receiver, right? Hines Ward was so great. Get somebody down there. You got to go knock the shit out of somebody for those guys to break the long runs. Just like as a receiver, you got to do something that others don't do or can't on a drive like that. And have a quarterback who has the balls dangling down to his ankle to deliver it. Middle field open and close. It's one of the easiest concepts in the world. It just is. It's real simple. Middle of the field open, we'll designate a guy the bender. If we designate Y, just real quick, and let me close this out. If we would have designated him the bender, Segs, on all verts, and then all of a sudden the middle of the field is closed, what should he have done? Stay up the seam, right? Great. You don't just automatically, because we designate you that just in case. Two times on that drive, the just in case had to happen. Bam. Takes the middle of the field. Ball delivered on time with accuracy and great catches, great finish, great concept. And this dude right here, the balls of a daytime burglar to stand in there and deliver it when he's getting hit in the mouth. Phenomenal stuff.
And that's where it comes back to. Think about, who did we, kind of get on a couple weeks ago? Carson Beck. What'd he do when he came out to the media? He put everything on his receiver. But that right there, everything you just explained, is why coaching matters so much. Because some kids you'll tell, okay, you're the bender. They're just running the bender. Like they said, they're not reading any defense. They're just running it.
Close. You can't. Then you're running to be covered, right, Sam?
Yes, exactly. So, I just love, and I love the fact that those four plays we showed, three different receivers. So it's not like it's the same guy just beating you. It's Cooper on the first catch. Then it's Nowakowski, the tight end. Then it's Becker, who's just a great wide receiver. And then back to Cooper for the touchdown. So, Indiana has everything. Every national champion when you look back at their seasons, they all have a game like this where they probably shouldn't win and they find a way. Oh. And for Indiana to do it on the road tells you they're real and tells you that they are a serious national title contender.
Isn't that the very essence of what a winner is, Sakes, to do it when, yes, when at times when you're not playing your best football and you're up against duress and pressure?
Anybody, it's easy when you're blowing everybody out.
Damn right. If they're up 30, that drives easy. But I also want you to think about how the coach prepares them for this and how. Didn't they look like – and, Segs, when I call it a bender, I can't have you kind of run a bender. If we're calling that and you got to read it, mm-hmm, you got to run because that's where the ball's coming out. If I say we're going to run the fade, they don't automatically say back shoulder on the one to the left. They call it a go route or a fade, and you got to adjust to the rip shot and come off it. So you're thinking go. You want the defensive back to think you're trying to run by him. Boom, back shoulder. You got to put your foot in the ground, and the throw's got to be precise and dynamic. Just a simple out cut on the second play, Segs, of the drive, just to know, I got to push up. I got to get out of bounds, run it. If I call a 10-yard out cut, I don't want you to run it at 8 or 12. I need you to run it at 10. The most impressive thing, aside from about 20 different impressive things and the line to give him protection other than the free runner on the touchdown on the blitz.
Yeah.
But that's the quarterback's job. You've got to beat the guy with the throw down there. And remember, they got a 12th man down in the red zone. That's why it's so hard in the red zone. Why? The end zone. You get the back of the end zone. Yep. I don't have to defend a 40-yard throw. So I'm squeezing everything, slant routes, everything. It's compressed. So the ball's got to come out on time even more so. The most impressive part of the drive, Sakes, what do offenses like to do? Give me a screen or a draw on the first play of a drive to get some yards. They took a sack. It's 2nd and 17. You're thinking, no way. Bam, 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 touchdown. After a sack, it would have been easy to come unraveled and say, we're the number 2 team in the country. We're at Penn State. Man, what are we going to do now? What he did, he got back up, got to the line of scrimmage. They already had the play design, ran the seam route, stayed up the seam outside the hash, didn't leak him in. The throw was exactly what protected him with the ball. Now we're on to something.
Yeah.
You saw the end result. Phenomenal, phenomenal drive.
Yeah, it just, like you said, this was Fernando Mendoza's Heisman moment.
There's no doubt.
Can he finish it off?
Draft moment, too, Sage.
Yes. Maybe. Well, I think that's kind of coming into clarity that he would, right now, by every mock draft you see, every draft Nick talking, Fernando Mendoza is the number one pick in this draft right now, with Ty Simpson and Dante Moore kind of right behind him. And that's whoever comes out. I mean,
he gave everybody else credit at the end, exactly what a starting quarterback supposed to give everybody else the credit they deserve. Love the kid. It was signature, man. That's a signature hole at a golf course. That was a signature moment for him. And he's been doing it all year. And tribute to Cignetti. Remember, he's had two starting quarterbacks. I mean, one got hurt last year, but he's doing this, what he's done with this team, with a different starting quarterback now, counting the injury last year, three different cats. And this one's better than all of them. He's special.
And I mean, if you're a Hoosier fan, you just have to be so excited. The fact that Indiana was able to lock this guy down to his contract with all the Penn State rumors with, you know, oh, could he go to Florida? Could he, you know, he said, no, I'm staying where I'm building this at Indiana in Bloomington. And I'm going to be here for the next, I think it was an 8-year contract he signed for like $90-something million. So good for Indiana. Good for Cignetti and great for Mendoza to have that
make
drive.
Proud, man. And he even said, he goes, I'm so proud of these kids. And they put their time in. And Segs, you can't do that unless you practice it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And you practice it and practice it. It was almost as if the Penn State played into their hands by giving them $120 to play, right?
Yeah.
And that sack with a loss of 7, you saw the monitor say 2nd and 17, to deliver it on time and to get that right back. Then it wasn't 4th and 17 where you're desperate, or 3rd and 17. Boom, just deliver it, keep it going. And it was precision and surgical and great friggin' throws and finishing catches on those last two.
We will continue to talk some college football tomorrow. We got Texas A&M. We got Texas Tech winning big over BYU. We got some other games, Oregon beating Iowa. So we had some really fun college football games. Bama finishing off LSU, you know, just to kind of put that final nail in that coffin of a bad LSU season. But let's jump to the NFL, Sean. We kind of crowned it the game of the weekend in the NFL. Patriots at Bucks did not disappoint. I thought both teams played well. Drake May didn't play this great football. Tampa gave him a little bit of trouble early on, especially. Baker played really well, but the Pats just continue to find ways to win games, and they are now sitting, what, 8-2 or 7-2, whatever they are. Can't remember off the top of my head, but they take down a really good NFC team in the Bucs in Tampa Bay.
The thing that stuck out to me, I'm not sure, Segs, as I watch him throw the ball. He is one of the best pure passers in this league in Drake May. He is. And you can see he's now starting to play like a guy who's been in the league 5, 6, 7 years. There's a command when I watch him play that's different for it. It just is. And they don't, I'm telling you, I can roll through. There's a lot better weapons at a lot of places, Segs. There just is. There is a lot better perimeter weapons, not to diminish who they are, but better. But the thing that sticks out to me is, with no shock, is the way the Patriots and Mike Vrabel's team plays defense. When you threaten them, they have a fine, and all, it kind of goes together. They always seem to respond. Does that make sense? And they got Tampa at their own game yesterday. Normally, Tampa's going. Boom, you give Sags, when you tell me when they were driving at the end of the game, you didn't think Tampa was going in to score.
Oh, yeah.
I did. Sure. Baker has the ball last.
Just the Baker we've seen all season long.
That's exactly right. They know how to win close games, and they keep doing it, meaning Tampa. Well, defense shut them down on fourth and short a couple. They did a great job of keeping them out on a couple third and shorts, fourth and shorts in the second half to get the ball back. So they did. I mean, it did not matter. So the defense came up, and then the offense, when you caught back, you know, when you scored, they go down and respond, whether it's a good special teams return, whether it's Drake May delivering the ball on time, whether it's a big run, they just responded. And now it looks to me, watching the Patriots play, like they actually know that they're good. I think that times early in the season, they were like, I think we're good. And I've been on teams like that. Yeah, damn, we're 5-2. It's kind of like Indiana. And I couldn't disagree, and I love the stuff. I couldn't disagree with Grass Guy more on this. Indiana is good as people think. I don't know what that means. Because, I mean, I know that, well, they played Penn State close and other teams kept them close. I just know they've gone into two hostile environments, regardless of Penn State and Oregon, and won. Now, I don't know if they're going to win the national title, but they are good. Their quarterback's real, the coach is real, and they get after it, and they knock the shit out of you. So they are real. It's the same thing with New England. They now got to the point where they actually think they're really good. And they are. And they have what it has. Physical, nasty defense that gets after it. They don't make excuses for the lack of weapons that they may have offensively. And a quarterback who stands in the pocket, delivers it, and is as good a thrower of the football as we have in this league. And a coach who Tennessee should have never got rid of in the first place. He just didn't have players. I mean, they got rid of the players. They just didn't, and then they eventually got rid of the coach. Kind of like they do Daboll, right? Yeah. Get rid of some of your best players. You can't do it or guys get hurt. So, I was so impressed because I was damn sure Tampa was driving to go put this thing. I was. But every time they did, response from New England. And 2 weeks ago, I said it. I think New England is possibly win the division. I'm convinced right now that overall, they're every bit. See, New England's got a bunch of different ways to beat you. Even if Drake May plays good but not great, they're still good enough to beat you in certain ways. They just are. I don't know if Buffalo is. If Josh Allen plays average, they're not beating. Well, we saw it yesterday. I mean, I'm talking about if he doesn't play spectacular, JB mentioned it. I felt like that he's got to carry an 18-wheel truck on his back a lot. When he and Cook are going, they can score on anybody.
Right.
But they are there. And I know, Sakes, you sent a message like they confuse you. Buffalo confused me too. 1 week, I think they're the best team in the league because I picked them to win the Super Bowl at the beginning of the year. But right now, they're not better than New England. And I don't care what anybody says. They're just not.
Remember, we just put up a poll question last week. Who's the best team in the AFC? They won running away with it. And now you come back and you lose to the Dolphins. I mean, what do people think now? It's like, I mean, New England has to be considered the best team in the AFC right now. I mean, Colts kind of are taking a step back now. They did find a way, but they didn't look great.
Jonathan Taylor was stupid good.
Well, yes, he's really like it's. It's crazy how good
he is. Put it this way. New England plays the Colts. New England's a favorite in the game right now on a neutral site.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that. And Travion Henderson, a rookie running back, 14 carries, almost 150 yards, 2 touchdowns. I mean, when you add that, give that weapon, give Drake May a run game, a real run game, that makes his job even that much easier and we see this the throw, level that he's playing at.
Say, yeah, that this throw. Not only throw, but look at the speed by Williams after the catch. Oh, freeze it at the top. Freeze. Now, clean pocket, right? Watch. Yep. So you say, I've always said, please give me a GoPro in the quarterback's helmet right here, please, Sage, so we can see what he's looking at. Now, I want you to see. You get a little separation on the little slant or cross right there by the left slot or left receiver. Look at really phenomenal pocket, right? Now, go a little forward and freeze it again. Freeze. Now, it's starting to collapse, right?
Yeah.
Look at this now. Starting to collapse. You think, oh, it's still, because now if I was teaching my quarterback, see the area by the hash mark, 71, about 2 yards behind 71's ass.
Yeah.
I'd say reset slide, keep your head up as we climb the pocket a little. Now watch Drake May. Go ahead. Freeze. He didn't get a chance to climb. And from the right side, he can't follow through with the throw. He gets the shit kicked out of him. Now look at the coverage when the wipes freeze right there. There is, he's throwing this to grass.
Yeah.
Backed up with a close game, vicious pass rush that looked like a clean pile. Left side sewn it up. Right tackle gets beat. Now, I want you to look. There's two guys on one. This ball is being thrown to the 40-yard line on the numbers, to the bottom of the numbers. When this ball leaves his hand, he's got no idea other than, I know the coverage. I'm throwing it to grass because nobody's out in front of him. No defender's out in front of him. There's no friggin' way. And you think, how's he going to get enough on this? He couldn't finish the throw.
Right.
Now watch this. If you don't think he's a pure thrower with a rifle arm. Bingo. And look at the accuracy. And then if it's a bad throw, it's a catch and a tackle. Guy tries to undercut it. And there's about three guys with the angle. No friggin' shot.
If that's, it's a foot to the left, that's a pick six.
That's exactly. And listen, I would have undercut it too if I'm 21. I'd have done the same thing because the ball, that's a 30-yard throw on a line. Getting hit in the mouth, you can't finish the throw. That you just hope it's in the catch radius, let alone in front, run after the catch. I say, if you anticipate, throw receivers open, and that's what he did. Difference in the game. And what happened? Now we've seen in college and the NFL, the two most important throws they made all day were getting the shit kicked out of them, hit in the mouth, delivering it, instead of bailing and playing it soft and bailing because they're watching the pass rush. It's feel, see coverage, feel rush, deliver the football. That you won't see a more accurate throw under duress in the NFL this year under those circumstances. And he delivers it on time. And I guarantee 21's thinking there's no friggin' way he made this throw.
Right.
Bam. He had to finish right here. It's like a golfer stopping his drive after he hits his driver, just stopping a foot in front of the driver after he's hit the ball. He doesn't even get the torque through it. Phenomenal throw. And I don't know what the 60-yard dash speed of Williams is, but I got news for you. It ain't slow, okay? Right. Segs, great throw, great finish, and balls the size of a daytime burglar, like I said, delivering the ball from the pocket.
Before we get out
now,
of here.
I could have made it easy, but Segs, real quick, I didn't mean to interrupt. Now, I was showing you that normally we'd say, climb that pocket to that open space, right? They're pushing guys by, so you say climb. So if I was critiquing and was being a nitpicky prick, if I'm coaching him in the meeting room, I'm saying, if you go back, I'm saying, dude, just climb up there and you'll get an easier visual of the throw. But you know what, Segs? Hence why he's the player with the coach. Do you know what happens if he climbs that pocket? The undercuts a tick. If he climbs it and throws it, it's late. If he climbs it and throws it, he would have been late with the throw. So he realized that I can't climb. I got to get this ball out. And well, he throws with that kind of accuracy. You won't see a better throw in the league this
year. That's where I would ask you here, if he climbs, would he – throw to the left, because the guy running to his left is open. Like we see it, the defender's behind, so it would have
to be side of the hash mark. Segs, he would, if he climbs here, he might have lost vision. Because look at see the underneath coverage guy there that ran underneath it before the hit. He's kind of staying in between the throw, and then he goes back even deeper. He comes back this side. See how the other guy's coming over the deep over route? He's going to throw the over route, try to make the same exact throw like on a crisscross. Right. To get it to him. But he realizes, if I climb, I'm late.
Yes.
Balls out. And it was even a three quarters. He couldn't even get anything into it. And he ripped it with a little torque and makes the great throw. Phenomenal.
Yeah. Very phenomenal. But before we get out of here, let's talk about the breaking news we had before the show. The Giants fire Brian Daboll. Jackson Dart gets hurt yesterday with the concussion in the loss to the Bears. Again, we see another rookie quarterback that is picked in the first round lose their head coach. We have already had one this year in Cam Ward, the first pick, lose Brian Callahan. Now we have Jackson Dart, who was playing good football, who, like Coach JB said, you know, watching that game, if Dart doesn't get hurt, I think the Giants win that game. But he does, and Russell Wilson is terrible. But just another scenario where a rookie quarterback now has his coach fired, especially his offensive coach, fired halfway through your rookie season. It's like, damn, now I got to figure this out. I got to figure out whatever, you know, it's Mike Kafka. So things are staying very similar for Jackson.
Yeah, the verbiage is going to stay the same because they've been calling plays from there. He's been calling plays for them for a couple of years. Right?
But you still have that, you know, my head coach is gone, especially an offensive guy. Cam Ward, you lose Brian Callahan. It's just, when are we going to stop this trend that when you have a coach who's on the hot seat going into a season where you're probably going to take a rookie quarterback, fire the coach then and bring someone in that you think, okay, I think you and Jackson Dart can be the next duo to take us to a Super Bowl instead of let's draft the quarterback, have him play under this guy. Then we're going to fire him halfway through, and then we're going to go find someone else. So he has to learn a whole new offense. Sans Caleb Williams and others in the past. The Bears did it to Mitch Trubisky, Justin Fields, and Caleb Williams. And we've seen it other places as well. It's just a trend that continues to baffle me by NFL front offices. And it's something that just seems so obvious. Yeah, but yet they continue to do it all over the league.
Well, first off, as a player, you just have to know going in, your position's fragile, and so is your head coach. And going in, there's a reason they picked you high.
Right.
Is it's a fragile situation. So you go in knowing, the ego says, well, I'm going to play well enough to save my coach's job that believed in me to draft me. But you also have to go in knowing, you know what? If not, I still got to do what I can to elevate the next coach. It sucks, but that it's not changing. It comes down to two things. One, you're trying to milk another year and be cheap as a front office. You just are. True. Knowing going in that if he didn't make the playoffs this year, Brian Daboll was more than likely going to get fired, unless they lost a couple games due to injuries, but they were hanging around and they were getting better. Like you said, maybe if Jackson Dart starts, there's two more wins on the schedule at the beginning. Who the hell knows? But I think that you had to be unreasonably good this year for the Giants. I'm talking about for the Giants to save Brian Daboll's job. It's not going to change anytime soon, Segs, because you know what? They're going to try to hold on as long as they can to hope that it gets turned around. And when it doesn't, you're like, well, why wait? And then we're at this point, the season halfway through the point. Even if they win some games, guess what? More than likely, they're going, unless Kafka goes crazy and they win six in a row, you're going to fire him and go get another one. But you don't want to change the verbiage during a season. You want it to be the same so your players can keep – you want to make it tougher on the coaches. You want the players to feel as simple as you can, especially when Jackson Dart comes back. It's not going to change things, but I get your point. It's the same madness as hiring a head coach before you hire the general manager.
Yeah.
The old guy, you know, when both are getting ones up, you fire both and you say, okay, well, we're going to hire this head coach, or the head coach stays, you bring a new GM instead of let the GM choose the coach, right? It's similar, not the same, but there's some similarities. It's not going to change because you know what they thought? Let's see if Russ Wilson can milk it. And Brian Daboll going in knew that he was on thin ice, Sags.
Yeah.
And if you lose a couple and lose games you should be winning, and you've had quarterback change, and then last year they were awful, you got rid of Barkley. It's not – Brian Daboll can coach, but listen, it's always going to be. Now, coaches can lose you games and get fired, but the Jimmys and the Joes are going to overcome at times bad coaching if you got enough of them, right? You can have a great coach with bad players, coach is getting fired. You can have great players with a decent coach, and if you got enough great players, the coach is going to get a contract extension. I've seen it on a regular basis. And if you got both, well, then you're Belichick and Brady, or your teams, you're Mahomes and Andy Reid, and you keep winning. And so finding that, to show you, put it this way, players last in the league. I know the average is 3.2, but good players last in the league a lot longer than good coaches, because if there's a lull in good players or injuries, it falls back on the head coach. And if you can't keep them afloat, you do it 2 years in a row, you're getting fired. Simple. Well, but at least they know they got Jackson Dart moving forward. And you got, I'll tell you what they're going to do, dude. You watch. The New York Giants are going to offer Lane Kiffin the head coaching job when the season's over. Watch. Get him back. You watch. I'm just telling you. He's a smart ass enough to deal with New York. And I mean that in an affectionate way. Mm-hmm. He's offensive minded enough to understand the NFL because he's been there. He understands how to handle. He's been through the Nick Saban thing, so he knows how to handle hardcore stuff. I'm just telling you right now, they are. I'd be willing to bet. I don't know if he'll take it. I don't know if he wants to leave college,
right.
But I'll be willing to bet you. Now, college may swoop him up because their season ends sooner than the NFL does, Sigs. But do not be shocked if somehow, some way, his agent's getting a call saying, we want Lane Kiffin. We'll finish this year out, but he is going to be we'd like to have him be the head coach of 2027 regardless, or 2026. Yep. They will offer him. If they don't, they're stupid. The quarterback, him, comfortability, your future relies on Jackson Dart's success right now. And Lane's just enough moxie to middle finger without middle fingering him to handle that. You watch. Yeah. I don't know who they're going to get, but he will be talked to. And if they don't, they're making a mistake.
Well, and a big reason why Brian Daboll was fired. I just saw this.
Right.
Against the Cowboys, Broncos, and Bears, the Giants had a 92.3, a 99.3, and a 96.9 chance of winning late in the fourth quarter. He lost all three of those games. So, I mean, that just can't happen if you're the head coach.
Eventually, as an ownership, it falls on that guy. Whether it's right or wrong or fair or unfair, there's nothing fair about pro sports. And it doesn't go the way we want sometimes. The head coach knows that, taking the job. And if you haven't been fired as a head coach, you haven't been worth a shit anyway. Because most of them get fired at some point only to do it again. Brian Daboll will coach again, and he'll be a good one.
All right, we'll end on a bet of the day, as we do every single day. We got Monday Night Football.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah.
Can I say one thing? I just want to – I know there are some people that have a problem with – God rest his soul, Commissioner Tagliabue, Paul Tagliabue, passed away at 84 years old. I think heart failure, and was going through some other issues. Parkinson's disease, which I think led to the heart failure. 84 years old, lawyer, all that. I know there's some, and I saw some about where – frustrated about his, you know, concussions and not rewarding the families. I understand every single commissioner is going to go through the good stuff they did, and they're going to be tagged with something that they didn't, no pun intended by saying the name tag, but Commissioner Tagliabue was always respectful to me and kind, and I think he was held in the highest regard. Hence, he's one of, I think, four commissioners in the Hall of Fame, Sigs. And I get it. And Goodell probably will get in as well. But Commissioner Tagliabue, you know, I always, you know, if you got criticism, can we let the body get cold before we do? His legacy too, you think about it, he was harsh against substance abuse. He was very good. And the Rooney Rule's his to give African-American and minority coaches, not just African-American, but minority coaches, you have to interview to give them a chance. Now, I still think the Rooney Rule needs to be better, how we go about it. So it's not just I'm going to interview him to fulfill. It's got to be a fair way to go about it. Because I can remember talking to my guy, Denny Green, and Denny even said, Sean, I'm not just going to interview because I'm a African-American minority head coaching candidate, and he deserved better, didn't he? Right. And he got better. I mean, you know, anybody that hired him knew they got a great coach. So Paul Tagliabue was at the forefront of that. And now we need to expand and make it better, but best to his family. And every commissioner is going to go through something that you don't like, but they also made a huge, he made a huge difference and belongs in the Hall of Fame. So I just wanted to get that in on a Monday for Commissioner Tagliabue at 84 years old. And made a difference in the NFL and did a nice job.
Yes, he did. All right, now our bet of the day to end the show. Monday Night Football, we got a good one. We got the Eagles traveling to Lambeau to take on the Packers. Packers right now, the last I saw, sit at -2.5 with the over-under set at 45.5. I think this is a very interesting game. You kind of said pre-show, like, we could have a low-scoring game here. And I have written down that I like the under in this game. But these two teams are fighting for, you know, the top of that NFC. When we talk about the Seahawks, the Rams, the Bucks, you know, those teams at the top of this league, this conference, but the Eagles and Packers still have something to say about that. And I think tonight's going to be a fascinating game between these two teams.
And I think both are Super Bowl contenders. I know Philadelphia is, It's a great opportunity for Jordan Love to shine, right? It is. And for them to run it. I think this is a 23-20 game. I'm taking the under in the Packers in this game. I think it's a field goal game, and I think the line is set exactly where it should be. I think it's a fist fight, and I think it's going to come down to what defense can get a great stop late and that their field goal kicker can take care of the business. Give me Green Bay to keep pace and hang in there in their division and get a really good defensive effort. And for them, the key tonight, you're going to have to make Philly go the hard way the whole way. the hard way, the old way, where you, you know, you're not giving them those home run big plays. You play man, a guy gets beat. I think it's going to be tough sledding. So would you say the over under 47 or 45, say?
45 and a half.
Yeah. I got it just by like a field goal under, like a 43-point game, 23-20 Green Bay. I think Green Bay covers by the half a point. I think it's a field goal game and two playoff teams when all is said and done.
Okay, yeah. So you're taking the Packers minus the points. I was leaning Philly, so I think I'm going to stick that way. I think they just get it done. I would take Eagles money line here. I think they walk into Lambeau and win like 20-17, something along those same score. And I do like the under. I do feel like it's going to be a defensive battle. Remember, the Eagles do have Jalen Phillips now rushing the passer, which really helps out that defense.
Because they big ad for them sakes, because yes, they're not rushing the passer like they normally have. You know, they're not doing it at the Denver Broncos pace. And remember, what is it, 3 years ago? Remember that sack pace they were on then, Sags, where every time we turned around, Eagles were knocking people in the mouth. That's what Denver's defense is doing, but still formidable, and they get a pass rush help. This is going to be an interesting game. I like defense better than I do offense in this game at Lambeau. I don't know what the weather's supposed to be. It won't be hot in Green Bay.
It's been freaking cold here where I live, and Green Bay's north of me about 6 hours. So I only imagine it's going to be frigid.
And both teams should be well equipped to deal with cold weather.
They've all played in it. And I think whichever quarterback plays better, I think, is the team that will win. And
kind of usually the way it works, who doesn't turn it over and gets a prevents a few three and outs, no doubt.
All right. Well, that'll do it for today's show. Tomorrow, we got more NFL to talk. I want to talk about the Steelers and what's going on there. All of a sudden, the Ravens are just a game behind them in the AFC North. We talked a little bit about the NFC North. I want to talk about Caleb Williams and the Bears and what you're seeing from him just inside the pocket. So I want to pick your brain about him there. We also have Texas A&M. We get to Texas Tech. We got Bama. We got Oregon with a big win. So as we will be on tomorrow before the college football playoff announces their newest rankings, as they do every Tuesday night, we'll talk about where we think teams should be ranked and what's going on with those teams.
The five best teams I've seen, just as a teaser this year, Ohio State.
Yep.
Indiana.
Yep.
Ohio State, Indiana. I said all five to you before.
A&M.
Ohio State, Indiana, Texas A&M. Listen, if you don't think Texas A&M is real, you're not watching, man.
Right.
The quarterback is different than Marcel they've Reed, had.
Dude.
He's different than they've had. Those three six, who are my other two teams that I had? I think Alabama is real. I do. I know it was an ugly win.
But think about that 6 weeks ago or whatever it was when we were
he was getting fired, remember?
Yeah,
they're going to fire him. So, and then the last one, I'm just telling you, if you like the Chiefs and say when the playoffs come around, they're dangerous, you better keep an eye on Georgia. You better. I know that the rankings have them, right? I get it. I'm just telling you. So, Georgia, in no particular, Georgia, Ohio State, Indiana,
Texas A&M,
and Alabama. All those in my mind are the five best consistent teams I've seen this year. And there's five or six more that can come. You know, if Notre Dame continues to do their thing, they can come and people can see. What was the final score of the Notre Dame Navy game against Sags?
I just had it. I don't have it off the top of my head.
I was watching it and I can't remember what the final score was because Notre Dame's gonna linger. You know, just are. But you know, those two lost early, but they'll get in more than likely if they run the table. So I can't remember what the final score. No big deal. We can touch it tomorrow. But those five teams,
49-10. They're stuck.
There you go. Because a lot of us thought it was going to be closer. I know College Game Day thought it was going to be a little bit closer with a Notre Dame late win. But Notre Dame's, after the first two, has become more impressive. And they're well-coached and good quarterback. So, but those five teams, to me, Sags, and we'll talk about them, any five of them plus a couple others can win the whole thing. And do not sleep on A&M. And I think we're probably now past the point of getting Kalen DeBoer fired. He's done a hell of a job, and the quarterback makes some really good decisions.
Hell of a job. So we'll talk about all that tomorrow as we do. Thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Bailey, who's now joined us. Thanks to Laura, as always, all of them behind the scenes, giving us all our great images. Our videos are open now, and everything that you see on all our social media platforms. So again, follow us at Unpaved on Rumble. Go like and subscribe to our YouTube channel and TikTok and Instagram and Threads and X and anything else, Facebook. There's so many damn social media.
All of them.
Companies. Right. Just go to all of them and search up Unpaved.
And we appreciate your subscription too. Always. We do. You guys are awesome.
We do. We will be back tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Central, like we are every single day. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Peace.
Unpaved, Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.